If you remember now, for some several messages, past messages, we've been talking about the 12 individuals that God named out of the tribes to send to the land of rest. And he told Moses that 12 would stand with him, and he named who they were. He named them by name, by characteristic, by authority, by habit. He told Moses right up front exactly how they were going to act. And then he gave him a promise. He says, these are the men, these are the characteristics that will stand with you. Moses, for some reason that's not explained, chose a different 12 to send. They came back with an evil report, and 10 of those 12 died because of the plague, because of their evil report, and millions suffered because of the 10. I know that you've heard the messages, and I know that you've understood them, but yet there are some who will say, but that was the Old Testament. And yes, it's true that there were millions of people, and God only chose 12 out of the millions. And out of those same millions, he only chose Moses and Aaron to speak for him. But now we're under grace, and after all, Jesus is come and gone, and now everybody can go to the Lord. We don't have that problem anymore where God has to name specific individuals, although I've proven to you time after time after time, God names specific men in order to speak to the multitudes. And in the name of grace, some would say, but it's different now. Now we can go directly to the Lord, and it's free for all. Everybody's on his own. And the 12 that were chosen then, well, that's just because it was Old Testament, and now we have a new game. Well, I have problems with that because Jesus said he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And God says he's no respecter of persons, and he says there's nothing new under the sun. So if he changed something, we got problems. In Luke 6:13, I will show you how the Old Testament and Jesus came not to break the law or to change it, but to fulfill it. In Luke 6:13, he'll fulfill it. And when it was day, he called unto him his disciples. And look at the word unto him. They're in parentheses. Let's read it this way. And when it was day, he called his disciples. And of them he chose 12. Now here comes that number again, 12. Doesn't he realize there's millions of people there that want to go directly to the Lord? Why is it he's hung up on these 12 dudes that have to be chosen to do all the talking? See, because he knows that if you go on your own, you're going to give the question you want, and you're only going to hear the answer you want. So now we have Jesus choosing 12, whom also he named apostles. And then we name them in verse 14, Simon, whom he also named Peter, and Andrew his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon called Zelotes, and Judas the brother of James, and Judas Iscariot, which also was the traitor. Isn't that just like a loving God? Knowing that you want to rebel. Knowing that you can't rebel unless he gives you a way. He gives you a help me to do whatever you want. You're going to find 11 of these people here will help you do what's right. But if you want to do what's wrong, he gave you a help me. In other words, Jesus is just as much God now as he was then. He gives us just as much leeway to do what we want to do now as he did then, and you still have a choice. Had he not named a Judas Iscariot, had he not given someone the authority who wanted to betray, nothing would have worked. Then love would not be love, and we'd all be robots, and nobody would have an option. But the main thing I want you to understand, and we'll go Sunday, God willing, into the names of all of these people. And just by way of giving you something to think about for Sunday, if you remember of the 12 that God named, the first man's name meant the rock of God. Now along comes Jesus some 4,000 or 5,000 years later. He named some people too. And the first one he named was Simon, who he changed his name to Peter, which means the rock, or a piece of the rock. Now, Prudential's lying when they told you that they'll give you a piece of the rock. Now, here it is, 5,000 years later, four or five, and Jesus is going to be naming 12 individuals. And when I show you what their names mean, you're going to see he's fulfilling the same law in the Old Testament and confirming the word that I told you. And I didn't know this. When I ran into this scripture, when God led me to it, and he said, he chose 12. And the first thought came into my mind, you're going to look up those names and they're not going to mean the same thing, and how are you going to explain that? And then I said, no, God's always the same. I don't know what these mean, but I know they're going to mean the same thing. And we come to Peter, and here we go, we're off to the races, the rock, a piece of the rock. But let's go back and find out, see, because everybody wants to be an apostle. The difficulty is nobody wants to be a disciple. Now, you need to understand that disciples are called, but apostles are chosen and named, so that there'll be no doubt as to who the apostle is and who the disciples are. And we have no say in the matter as to which is which. Now, the first thing that happens, and when it was day, he called his disciples. Now, Jesus calls his disciples. And let me tell you something before we go any further. You cannot be an apostle unless you're a disciple. But you can certainly be a disciple without being an apostle. Now, everybody, every apostle is a disciple. But not all disciples are apostles. So I have my function as a disciple, but also have one as an apostle. And some would say, blasphemy. Why? Show me somewhere where these are men, flesh and blood men, just like me. And I have no way of knowing, but there might be other apostles in here. After I give you the definitions and the qualifications, you decide. But I know one thing, you're all disciples. And because we're all disciples, if you're saved, you're all called. And called has three definitions, because you're three. It means to address. First, it means to summon. You're summoned. It means to address and to speak to. There's three things as disciples that we all have. We're summoned, to be addressed, and to be spoken to. Now, summon means to order to come or appear. Some of y'all have the notion that church is a place you go when you've got nothing better to do, or when you start to think, well, maybe people are going to start to think something's wrong if we don't show up. You come just to satisfy people. You're wrong. You are summoned to come. If you're a disciple, you are ordered to come and to appear. Church is not optional, although you have your freedom to say no. You can disobey the order, but it's still an order. It isn't when it's convenient or when you feel like it. And for those of you that know a little bit, if you're running ahead of me, disciple means to learn. You're not going to learn anything unless you show up. You're not going to learn anything unless you understand you're summoned. Now, if any of you ever get a summons to go to court, you all show up dutifully, don't you? Because a big bad boogeyman's going to come and get you if you don't. And Jesus said, look, I'm not that way. I'm going to give you an order, but you have the option to say no. You can make excuses. You can make and create circumstances to semi-legitimize you not being here. But you're still summoned. Summon also means to call for or send for with authority. I'm making no apology for the fact that you have no business not being here. None whatsoever. You have a responsibility and a duty to be here. If I came, if I handled the responsibility behind this pulpit the way some of you do on that end, we wouldn't have a church. We'd be eating at the Chinese restaurant about 2-3 times a month, or maybe more, because I was too busy. Summon also means to order by summons to appear in court. But here's really the whole purpose for the summons. See, well, why is God being so dogmatic? Why does he force it? Not forcing you. Let me tell you what else summon means. It means to remind, to advise, and to warn. You see, God needs to remind us constantly that we need our Father. We need our daily bread. We need it daily. It's a constant reminder. And all of us need advice. And if you don't think you need advice, just run down the last week in your life, and you'll see you need advice. And then the last part of the word summon means to warn. In other words, God says, you need to come here, not because God needs you, and I certainly don't even like you. You're here to be warned, you're here to be reminded, and you're here to be advised. And so am I, by the way. I'm listening here. Comes out there, but it goes in here too. See, I've been studying this all week, but this is the first time I'm going to hear it, just like you. Faith cometh by hearing. I'm no more equipped to do this than you are until this message is over, because I've got to hear it too. Up until this point, I've only read it. And you think you can get it by just reading it, and you only read. I could put on the back of a postage stamp what most of you read. But even if you read as much as I do, and I'm not calling it a virtue, it's a gift that I read as much as I do. God has closed things in, so I got nothing else to do. And no place else to do it either. But the point that I'm trying to make, that even as much time as I spend, 6, 10, sometimes 12 hours a day, reading and studying and or talking to someone about the Lord, I still get nothing till I come and hear it. I've got to hear it too. When I take vacation, which isn't too often, I've told you many times, by 2 or 3 days, I can't stand it anymore. I've got to hear it. If nothing else, I've got to counsel with someone so I can speak it, because I read and read and read, and after a while, nothing happens. I've got to hear it. And before long, God will send me someone. I don't care if I'm sitting at Disneyland. Somebody will walk along and start talking to me, and then I can hear it. But up until then, I'm under the same unction that you are. And if I can't get it in 6, 8, 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks out of the year, what chance do you have? I've got to hear it too. I've got to be reminded. I've got to be advised. I've got to be warned, just like you. I'm under a summons to come and appear here. I'm called for and sent for with authority because I'm a disciple, and so are you. And he's God and we're not. It's just that simple. Now, we're summoned to appear in court. In other words, every single day of your life, your enemy is bringing accusation against you. The sad part about it is 90% of the time he's telling the truth. And in my case, 100% of the time, he's telling the truth. But I need to go to court to have my lawyer speak up for me and to say he's covered because I paid for that. Now, Reuben, you shouldn't have done that, but it's paid. That's wrong, son. You shouldn't have done that. Don't do it again, but it's paid for. Now, you got to appear in court to take care of those things. If you don't appear in court, they're going to send someone to get you. And then you're going to wish you had gone to court. And I'm telling you, the insanity of not coming is, I'm already telling you, you're already free. The fine's been paid. All you've got to do is show up and plead guilty. That's all you've got to do. Now, some of you don't show up at all, and then they put out a warrant for your arrest. And other of you show up and you plead innocent, knowing you're as guilty as the day is long. And I've learned a long time ago, you show up to court, you plead guilty, you got a lawyer that's already paid. It's paid for already. It makes no sense to plead innocent, notwithstanding the fact that you're lying anyway. And how do I know you're guilty? It's simple. We're all guilty. That's no big, there's no crystal balls back here. I don't even drink tea. I have no tea leaves back here. I just know you're all sinners. I know we all have a need to go to court to have our lawyers speak on our behalf. But see, there's more than that happens. You also get reminders that he loves you, that you're not alone. And this is a refuge. This is a place where we can go to be reminded and told again, in spite of what you've done all week long, here I am again pleading with you and telling you how you can have a better week. Let's forget last week. And in spite of that, I'm also here to advise you, remind you that what you did last week is water under the bridge, to advise you now, don't do it this week, because this is what I want you to do. Or to warn you of what's going to happen if you don't do it. And it'll be of your own doing. And he said, look, when you get there, when I summon you, when I call you, it's for a purpose. It's to address you. He knows where you live. He knows your zip code even. He knows the street you're on. Some of you live on Sorrow Lane. But you have a summer home. It's called Easy Street. And when you're on Easy Street, I don't see you. But the minute you move into Sorrow Lane, here you are. To you, God is someone you only go to when something is wrong. So you're depriving yourself of the real joy of the relationship with God. Is there a man or a woman in here who has children who would be happy with the situation if that child only came to you when something is wrong and the rest of the time ignored you and treated you like you didn't exist? And all they want is, gimme, gimme, gimme. I need, I need, I need. And then when you give them, then they're gone. And as long as they don't need, they don't give you the time of day. Why do they treat you like that? Because that's the way you treat God. That's why. Maybe you have a wife who doesn't really get close to you and want to interact with you unless she's setting you up. She wants something. Or maybe she put a nick in the car. She's trying to be nice to you because when you see it, she knows you're going to go into a tailspin and screw yourself right into the ground there and have to dig you out. So she's got to set you up. And you see, that kind of a relationship, you can say, gosh, I wish it wasn't like that. Why is it my husband only gets romantic about 11 o'clock at night? Why doesn't he treat me differently during the day? Why isn't he romantic? Why doesn't he do things for me during the day? Because that's the way you treat God. Only time you come to him when you need something. And you deprive yourself of the joy of the relationship to just be able to come and say, Lord, thank you for everything is so great. And then he'll tell you, say, why don't we do something for such and such and such and such? And before you know it, you're so involved in helping others, you don't have a problem in the world. See, some of you treat God like he's an old shoe. And I want you to understand, this thing is not optional. Now, you don't have to come, but you're under a subpoena. You're under a summons. And if you're a disciple, you have no right not to be here. I don't know what you have to do that's so important. I don't know who you're doing it with that could be more beneficial, more joyful, more fulfilling, more satisfying than to have God himself speak to you and tell you it's all right. Let's try it again. I don't know who you have or what you have that's that important. I've never found anything, and I've been around the world, and I've never found anything that can take the place of what we have here. But you see, God says, I summon you, I call you, I summon you, but it's also to address you. And address means to direct spoken or written words to. Here's the written words. And here's the spoken words. You come to church to be talked to, not to listen to yourself or what you're going to do when you're done or where you could have been or what's happening or what you don't agree to. You're listening to yourself. You're here to be talked to. You're here to be addressed. And address also means to have skill and tact in handling situations. In other words, God says there's a specific reason that you can't afford not to miss. I've said this to so many people before. You're going to get nothing until you understand the importance of assembling ourselves together. And if you quit your job and read even more than I do, you'll still get nothing, because I get nothing until I hear it. I want you to understand how important it is as disciples. This is our responsibility. This is where everything begins for you and I. Everything that we need for the week begins right here for all of us, not just for me and not just for you, for both of us. And he says, now I've called you, I've summoned you, I've directed you, I've ordered to come here as disciples. You're not here as a preacher or an apostle, you're here as a disciple. I've put in my days, all week long, I've been a disciple. I've sat at my couch over my coffee table being disciple for literally hours, day after day after day. Now it's your turn, 45 minutes. 50 if I choose. 60 if you start worrying about your corns. He says, I've called you to be disciples. And a disciple is a learner and a pupil, one who is here to learn and to understand, not to teach and not to criticize. This is not Broadway. Too many Broadway critics. You're here to learn. And it amazes me how some of you try to learn. We get the logic of learning just goes right out the window. You think you can go home and read it yourself and learn. And if you think about every school you've ever been to, every school that exists, there's always a flesh and blood human being in front of the class, directing and teaching the class. Or we wouldn't need universities. Every library could be a university if you could learn by yourself. Nobody can. Nobody can learn by themselves. And then you further amaze me in your lack of logic in the way you try to learn. You come here and I say, let's study chapter 6. Verse 13. And these is all the things that I've learned, and I've shared them with you. Now when you go home, do your homework. Memorize this. Get it in your mind. Check it out. Do the reference work. What do? You go home and you read. If you read it out, you go read something else. Now think about this. You go to a classroom. The teacher says, start in chapter 1. We're going to test you tomorrow on chapter 1, and gives you a lecture on chapter 1 of whatever you're studying. You go home in your infinite wisdom, and you study chapter 13. And you learn nothing from chapter 13. When you come back to class and take the test the next day on chapter 1, you don't know anything there either. You flunk both ways. And that's how you try to learn the word. And some would say, well, yeah, but I heard that already. I listened to it on the tape. Some of you have hundreds of tapes. You mean you have already learned everything that's on those tapes? I can go back and listen to every one of them, and I'm the one that studied and put 20, 30, 40 hours in them, and every time I listen to one, I learn something new. And it doesn't matter which one I pick up, it tells me exactly what I've got to know then. But you, in your amazing wisdom, you want to learn here spiritually, directly opposite and illogically to the way you know. That's the only way we can learn. The teacher takes you systematically, chapter and verse, book by book. And you go home and you study what you heard in class that day. Why do you do it differently here? And then there's some of you who don't study at all. Don't do your homework. And then you'll come back to the next sermon, and because you haven't done your homework, you sit there and go, huh? See, God says, we're here, you're called. And let me tell you something, a called disciple who doesn't heed the calling ends up a very frustrated Christian who's living the same way he or she did before they became Christians and don't understand why. It's because you don't hear the calling. You're not a pupil. A pupil means a person who is being taught under the supervision of a teacher. Now, you're not going to change that definition. You're not going to change that meaning. I don't care what you do. I'm going to tell you why you don't learn. Because you absolutely refuse to be taught under the supervision of a teacher. You'd rather go home and talk to your ceiling tiles at night. And you think you're praying to God. Some of you have the audacity to think you can go directly to God. I can't even go directly to God. I went to Luke, right, brother? Luke told me all this. And I have to go to a dead one. He's in heaven right now, but he's physically not here. Where is there a book of Jesus in this Bible? Those of you that say you go directly to the Lord, you're lying. You say, I have to seek the Lord on this. You're lying. You have to seek the Lord's representative on this. Now, I don't understand why God set it up this way, but we all have faith. And my faith has to be used a little bit differently because I have to get it from written words. But I told you before, I'm not excluded. I have to come here and hear it. Sure, it's coming out of my mouth and it's my voice, but they're not my words. I've got to hear it too. But I don't go directly to the Lord. I go to a man that God selected, and this week he said, Luke's the man of the hour. Luke's going to tell you what I told him to tell you. And then I come here, and you don't want to hear it from Luke. You'd rather go home and hear it from John's Mansville, your ceiling tile man, or Standard Paint, you talk to your walls. I don't know what you're going to learn from the wall. Have any of you ever received an answer from the ceiling? Oh, Father God, please help us. I don't see any Father. I see a ceiling up there. Oh, Jesus, Luke. He said, ask in my name. But you see, there's always a man we've got to go to. I don't know why he set that up, but it's obvious. You can look at this from cover to cover. There's no book of Jesus. Why, this God we serve had the nerve to put the name of a human being who also was a sinner just like me and needed salvation in front of every chapter and call it the book of Luke. You have no problems with that. And if the man were resurrected now and God sent him back and he stood behind this pulpit and he told you eyewitness account of what he saw, you'd say, wow. Well, I'll tell you something. I'm going to tell you a little secret. Jesus said to Thomas, because you have seen, you believe. But blessed are those that have never seen and yet believe. Now, the worst thing that could happen to you is that Jesus would come in here himself or send Luke himself or Moses himself, because then you'd be talking to someone who'd seen, and then you'd lose your blessing. As Thomas said, not me until I see and feel. I ain't buying it. And he said, here then, see and feel. And he says, it's good. You believe because you've seen and felt. That's good. But blessed is the one who's never seen and yet believe. I'll tell you the truth, I've never seen. All of this, I'm taking it by faith. I can't tell you that I saw any of this. I'm only coming and tell you with all the faith that I'm capable of, I know this is true. This is exactly what happened. But I've not seen it. I've seen the results of it in my life, and I've seen the results of it in your life. But I've not seen it. You understand we're blessed? The worst thing that could happen is for you to spin out and have a vision and see something. Because then you've lost your blessing. A pupil is one, again, who is under the supervision. You must be taught under supervision. Other than that, how is God going to guide us as a congregation? What kind of a shepherd is he when he gives all the sheep their own map? That shepherd will go bananas. He says, Lord, what do you expect me to do? They all got their own map. How's the man going to tend the sheep? How is he going to feed them? By helicopter? No, the whole thing is they have to stay in a group. They have to graze in the same place. The shepherd goes ahead and he has to check and he has to make sure that there's enough grass and it's the right kind of grass. He has to make sure there's no poisonous weeds because sheep are stupid. They'll eat anything. Then he has to make sure there's water very close by. And then he has to plan it out because if sheep go more than 3.5 miles between watering, they get sick and die. So he has to plan out a route. He has to go ahead and say, 3 miles and 3 quarters, that's too far. Got to find another way. I got to have my sheep watered in 3.5 miles or less. I've got to have them fed by a certain time. I've got to have them to the next watering place by a certain time. I can't drive them too fast because the young will die. I can't drive them too fast or lead them too fast because those that are pregnant, the lambs that are the ewes or whatever they call them, sheepsies or whatever they are. I'm not a farmer, you'll have to forgive me. Them lady sheepsies, they got to walk slow. You know how they walk. Got to take them into consideration. Now, how can the shepherd make sure that all that happens systematically and in order if every sheep gets to go wherever they want to say, oh, I think I have some dandelions over there. Did you hear what's on the other side of the hill? Man, they got some wild oats over there to make you high on a kite, brother. Well, the shepherd would go bananas. There'd be no way that he could fulfill his responsibility. And that's why he has made sheep the kind of animals that they are. They're led. But see, the problem with sheep is they'll follow anybody. They go head to tail. They're just like elephants. If they don't hear a voice of the shepherd, they'll just pick out a tail. That's true. If you know anything about sheep, they go head to tail. So what happens, the shepherd, knowing that, he has to find all the maverick sheep. These are the sheep that don't like to be led, because the shepherd knows that sucker's going to go out and take a bunch of sheep with him. So what does he do? He walks up to that sheep and says, I had enough of your maverick in here, child. What does he do? He takes that sheep and breaks its leg. And then he puts it over his back and he carries that sheep everywhere because that sheep cannot walk. Now, is that a sign of cruelty? Look what happens. That sheep starts getting so used to being so close to the shepherd every day because he can't walk, that after the leg is healed and that shepherd puts that sheep down, no more maverick. No more maverick. And unfortunately, you can tell if you're a maverick if God has to break your leg to get you close. If something has to go wrong for you to show up, and you want to be close only what's wrong. You got a broken leg. I swear some of you have got to be centipedes. When are you going to run out of legs to break with them? And I thought, man, I'm not too bad myself. I've been around the mulberry bush on that myself. And that's why I told you, it's stupid to only come to the Lord when there's wrong. Because you know what's happened to you? He's broken your leg. It's an act of love. You've forgotten how nice it is to be close to him every day. You looked at your paycheck. Maybe you looked at what you have. Maybe you looked at your own brain and thought, oh, I can handle it now. Where you got that idea, I don't know. But you have forgotten what it's like to be close to him every day. And see, these things happen so you can remember again. And once that sheep is down, never leads anybody astray again. Never. The maverick sheep ceases to be a maverick sheep. The shepherd says he has to keep control of the sheep. And he has to understand who he has and what he has. And some of you are being led by others. And then there's some of you being led by yourself, and that's the worst choice of all. Now, head to tail is hard enough, but if you're following your own tail, you've got to have some back problems, if nothing else. Now, that doesn't make sense. You'll walk funny if you do that. Now, the reason for being a disciple is to be a pupil, but it's to learn. Now, learn means to come to know how, not to come to know. See, you haven't learned if you just know. You haven't learned until you know how. And some of you are satisfied with just knowing. And then you look at your life and it's abundantly obvious you don't know how. Learn also means this, and I didn't know this until today, by the way. Learn means to hear. But learn also means this. You think once you've got it memorized, and once you say, oh, I know what that means, and I agree with all this, and I've got it, and I've learned it. No, you haven't. The next and last definition of the word learn means to acquire as a habit or an attitude that you've learned. Most of what you've learned is still up here. It never has got down to the feet yet. Why? Because you're still acting the same, and you still have the same habits, and you still have the same attitudes, although you know better. Now you know what's happened. Now there's a real division going on, right? Because before, your attitude, your habit, and what you knew were all the same. Stupid. Now you have this brilliance from God, light from God. You've been illuminated in your brain, and you thought you learned it. But you deny the acquiring of that you've learned as a habit and an attitude. So you continue doing the same thing, and now you know better. You were better off before you knew. Because at least then you were dying peacefully. Now you're dying horribly. And I'm not saying you'd be better off not being saved. You'd be better off to be saved and not know what it meant, if that were possible. But you see, once you get in the wilderness, there's no going back. You're saved and you're saved and you're saved. And there's no, you ain't getting out of it. That's too bad. And the saved don't go back to Egypt. But the ones that aren't disciples aren't going into rest, so you're stuck with the wilderness. Why? Because you know now. And I believe everybody in this room knows how. You lack one thing. It hasn't become a habit and an attitude yet. And why do you learn? You're a pupil to learn. You're a disciple to be a pupil, and you're a pupil to learn. Now, once you've learned and you've got the right habit and the right attitude, now what? Now you've got to understand. You thought that understanding and learning and being a pupil and knowing were all the same thing. They're not. You can learn and not understand. You can know how and not know and not have it be a habit. Well, see, now that you've learned, now that you've acquired a habit and an attitude and you know how, now you've got to understand. Understand means to stand under or to stand among. In other words, Jesus Christ is the refuge. Now, you've got to stand under that. That's what understand means. Look it up. It also means to know thoroughly and to grasp clearly and fully the nature, the character, and the function of something. Now, in other words, I have to get you to the point where you have a clear, full grasp of the nature, the character, and the function of you. You thought I was going to say Jesus. You're the problem. Jesus is not your problem. He's perfect. If your right leg was broken, would you want to know what's wrong with your left leg, you dummy? See, Jesus said you'll know the truth and the truth shall make you free. The truth about Jesus, that's going to save you. But what do you need to be free of the one that's got you in bondage? You've got to know about you. You've got to know your nature, your character, and how you function. And most of you don't like that. That's why you go study by yourself. That's why you belong to the first ceiling tile church of El Cajon. The Methodist wall paints. You go to all the wrong things because you don't want to come to a place where someone is going to tell you what you need to hear, but you don't want to know. It says you need to understand. You need to know clearly. Now, you see, now we're at the point where Jesus says, I've called the disciples, and that's all of us. Now, understand this. He called his disciples, but he chooses apostles. And he not only chooses them, he names them, so you'll know who they are. Now, understand, there's two areas of apostleship. There's obviously this one in the church, where we need a spiritual head here, someone to do the talking, but we need someone at home as well. And if you'll learn how to recognize the apostle in church, your family will learn how to recognize the one at home. But before they can do that, you have to recognize it. Now, I'm going to tell you first, he called the apostles. Many are called, but few are chosen. There's 5 million people out there, but only 12 were chosen. They're all called, but they're all chosen. Or only 12 were chosen. Now, let me tell you what the word choose means. Because remember, he called us all, but he only chooses 12. He only chooses, and I'm going to tell you later on in later messages what those 12 characteristics are. But right now, I'm going to tell you what the word choose means. So that you can understand, you have no say in it, neither do I. Choose means to select. It means to choose someone, to show a preference for someone. Select means to chosen in preference to another. Don't ask me why he prefers one to another in terms of apostleship. I don't know, but it's obvious that he does. I think I know why. I'm not sure. I think he chooses the worst. Select also means careful in choosing or selecting. And here's how you can tell the person that's chosen. Here's the characteristic, the last definition of the word chosen. It means to relate in words in a systematic or set discourse. In other words, the man that's chosen to be an apostle, God relates to him in a systematic and set discourse. Everything for that man comes out of the Word of God, the Bible. The disciples get it from a teacher. The apostle gets it from words set in a systematic, set discourse. That's the way that is. That's what the word choose means. Now, that doesn't mean you get to choose. I know you read when you feel like it, what you feel like it, and if you feel like it. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you from someone that knows. When you're chosen, and God has chosen you to relate to you in words, you don't read when you feel like it. You read for survival. I mean, it's a way of life. You cannot escape it, and you don't want to, by the way. It means God has said, I'm going to relate to you in words. And why does he do that? So I can learn. He relates to me in words of a set, systematic discourse. Why? Because he's teaching me how to come and relate to you in words, in a set, systematic discourse. Not jumping, hollering, screaming. And I watch some preachers, and I love them, and they can preach however they want. I don't have the, quote, gift they have. They'll put their Bible on the pew here, read the text for the day, and then for an hour they're walking all over with the microphone and talking about how they do that, I do not. But the Bible, they start out with the Bible, and that's the end of that. Then they tell you about how they got saved and what miracles they saw and what brother did this and this happened and that happened over there. And never go back to the Bible again. I'm not criticizing that. All I'm saying is, if that's a gift, I don't have it. All I know is what's in this word. All I know is systematic, word by word, chapter by chapter, verse by verse, line by line, precept by precept. That's all I know. If you want something else, you're going to have to go somewhere else. This is all I know. I only know how for him to relate to me in words, and therefore that's the only way I can relate to you. I can't do it by feelings and emotionalism. I don't know how. Now, the word relate is interesting. I'll tell you how important this Bible is to both of us. Relate means to have some connection or relation. But relate also means to associate in words. Now, those of you that are married, you want relations? You want to relate? You better start throwing some words between you. You better start doing some talking. I suggest you turn off that idiot box, idiot. And the boom box, boomer. Amen, brother. A lot of booming going on. We got to relate in words, child. Boom, ba da dum, boom, boom is not going to do anything for you. That's the way you relate. Why do you...